Okay, there we are. So good morning, everybody. Okay, you just finished the last lecture, so we but I see that everybody's mostly there. You are 34 to be there. So we'll start slowly so that you can catch up. The topic for today, there are no big news for the project, except that I will switch to the web page. There we are. So I changed a bit the schedule for the project. It was most of you send me their questions, and I did read them quickly, and they are interesting questions, and maybe a subject that you didn't think of. Because it's not that evident, is that using the visualization as a tool to understand the impact that would have had a specific policy about missions in the lab. For example, if you allow only two missions every year for the every person in the lab, or if you allow only a specific amount of emissions, so to see if the consequences of a specific policy, so that you can compare between the reality and what would have been the reality if a specific policy is applied. So it's called a what if scenario. So if you change some of the rules, what are the consequences? So I will add some precisions on that on the project page. And if some of you are interested in that, that's also something quite interesting for the next step. So the next step is not for next week, but the week after. So you have 2 weeks now to design your visualization. And again, I will expand on that. The idea that you prepare by designing visualizations, I mean specifying the visual mapping. Whether in a formal form like the table we have seen, and we'll go back to that in the lecture, and also using just drawings. You can draw on paper or using any tool you want, but drawing on paper is quite efficient, in fact. If you have color pen still, you can have some prototypes. And that's what is the design of visualization about. So I will expand this section. I will send an email maybe today or after the weekend with the details about this step, which is for 2 weeks. And then for the next step, which is the implementation, we'll wait a little bit to see how the things are going in France, and to mostly to know if you will be in groups or if you will work alone on this part.
Okay, I would
Usually,
like for the design section, do we need to design like one design, or we can make several ones and then choose between?
I will expand on that, and the idea is to have less design than the questions. So you will choose some questions, and you will design a small number of visualizations. I have to I have no precise number, but maybe 2 or 3 visualizations, and later on you will implement maybe only one. And in fact, it depends on the complexity of the visualization. So if you have a simple, really simple visualization, then the idea will be to have some of them. If you have a single complex visualization, it's sufficient. But I will define precise rules so you can understand what I have in mind. So I have some question in the visualization. Are we to stick to the questions we did, or maybe no? If you have new questions, you can add them, and you can design visualization for the new question, of course. And especially with the topic I just described right now, if you want to explore what if scenario, then you may come up with new ideas. Okay. So I will add a paragraph on the web page with explaining what I have in mind by what if, and giving precise rules for the design of visualization. Right. So let's go back to the slides. Okay. So for those who arrived a bit late, I was speaking about the project, and the details will be on the web page, and I will send an email to tell you the web page has been updated. It will be after the weekend, I guess. So where were we? So the previous lecture was on visual mapping, and we detailed the various data types and then the various graphic variables. And now the last thing we did was to have a look at how we design visual mapping. And remember, the idea is knowing what are the data attributes and knowing what are the graphic properties, so graphic variables, and especially their properties in terms of what kind of comparison they allow to find the best match between the two. And this match, there are several possibilities. It's a problem with many constraints, and you have to make decisions. And those decisions can be guided by those guidelines, but also by considerations coming from the questions you want to answer. If you want to answer questions about a specific attribute, then this attribute might be given a priority when choosing which variable you will use. Remember, for example, we had an example with three quantitative attributes. Then obviously you want to map two of them on the axis, and the two of them that you will choose are probably the more meaningful for the user. And then the third one, you can map it to the size, which is a bit less expressive, but still, which has some good properties. So this ordering is something you have to choose. And to help you look at all the possibilities, so the last thing we had a look at was this table proposed by Card and McKinley. And the idea, so here is an example with the visualization on the left, the idea is that on the first column, you put the data attributes, then you put the kind of attribute it is, okay, quantitative, nominal, ordered data. And then the next two columns, in those columns, you can, so that's something new for today, you can specify if there are any transformation. So the column in the middle tells if there is a transformation. So what kind of transformation is, for example, if you do some discretization, you can change the kind of data that you have. That's why you have a second column with the data type after the transformation is applied. So here, the transformation is just the identity, so the data type is the same on the two columns. And for the next attribute in this column, so the transformation column, you can tell an interaction. So for example, there, SL is a shortened for a slider. So to select a specific title in the interface, in the user interface, there is a slider where you can do selection in the titles. So it uses alphabetical ordering. And so the various kind of interaction are given in the paper by Cardon McKinley, which was given as a reading for you for this lecture, right? So for example, BR stands for bounded range. So that's a kind of slider. So for the length of the movie, if you look at the interaction, that's a kind of slider where the two ends of the slider can be can be moved. So you can select a duration for the movie between the lower bound there and the upper bound there. And both bounds can be changed and selected there. So this part roughly describes the interaction. And that's why there are no given mapping, because it's only filtering, right? So for the precise meaning of this column, you will have to refer to the paper. I won't go into details in the lecture. And then remember, we have the main graphic variables, the position, T, which is the time of the visualization itself. So it's it's not a graphic variable it's not included in the set of graphic variables by Bertin, because at the time Bertin work, visualizations weren't interactive. So T there is the fact that you can have different visualization at different times. So it's not the time in the data, it's the time during the interaction or the animation. Think of, for example, in the Gapminder visualization, when you press the play button, then the visualization changes. And so the time in the data, the year in the data, is mapped onto time for the visualization. In this case, you have a mapping between a time attribute and the time of the visualization. But remember, 2 weeks ago, I tried to explain that it's not necessarily the case. For example, you can, if you have a 3D data set, and at one time the visualization shows a specific slice of the data set, and if using animation, you go through the different slices, so through one of the dimensions of the data set to show slices, successive slices of the data set, then the data attribute, for example, the depth data attribute, will be mapped onto the time of the visualization, because you have an animation, right? And then in the R column, you have what is called by Card and McKinley the retinal variables, and using a letter you specify which variable is used. For example, C stands for color. Again, the list of the letters is given in the paper, so you have a color, size, and so on. And on the left of the table, the letters that you use can be P if you use a mark which has no dimension, a dot, which can have a shape like a circle, a square, and so on, but it's a dot. You will use an L for a line and an A for an area, if you fill an area, right? Okay, so to better understand this table, we did some examples. I think we looked at the visual mapping of the gapminder visualization, and maybe also at the visual mapping for the map of the Russian campaign. Remember well. So we will do other examples so that you can be sure to know how to do that. Okay. So what we'll do next is to start looking at some examples to show you that we now have a clear idea on what is a visual mapping and how to design visualization. And I will show some examples of visualization. And you will see that most of the examples are more complex than just giving a mapping between the attributes and the visual variables. So it's not enough to fully describe a visualization. First, because there are many details that cannot be captured by a table like that. After that, you will see that that's the part for the mapping from the data to the graphics. But in our visualization pipeline, something we haven't spoke about yet, the interaction, the fact that you can go back into this in this pipeline, and that's the part after this one. You will see that even more with the interaction, we have no good way to describe the interaction without relying on showing the interaction or for each specific case designing the interaction. But first, let's start with what is called a visualization zoo. And in fact, this term was first used by Jeffrey here in 2010. And at that time, he had a PhD student who was Mike Bostock. And I think it's Vladimir Ogiev. Vetsky, and he was an intern, or I don't remember well, but my Bostock remember that the guy behind this tree, right? At that time, my Bostock was working, so his PhD subject was doing a toolkit for visualization. And that's what became after these three. And in this paper, it was a paper intended at a broader audience to show the variety and the diversity of visualization. So in this paper, there are examples of visualization. So we'll look at some of them without giving too much details, but just to show the variety of things and to show that capturing the visual mapping is not something easy. Right? Okay. So you will have to you have to read this one. Yes. So they start with a time series where the idea is that you can you have a data set with a specific attribute which is time, right? And in this case, most of the time what you want to do is to map the time onto the horizontal axis, right? So if you for this one, so we have some stock options, we have the time horizontally. So if we want to describe this visualization, to switch back there. So we make a quick drawing. The value of the stock, and if you look carefully, you have different colors for the different stock options, right? So what you can do to practice is to try to fill the table. So we have the attributes, we have the kind of data, and we'll skip the two columns about data transformation because there we don't have data transformation. Then we have two columns about links between data. We won't need them. And we have what is called control processing. It's when you have to use a more high level brain functionalities like readings, or so it's not direct perceptions, right? So what are the attributes in our data? So we have the time, right? What else? We have the value of the stock option. And we have, if I switch to the to the visualization, you see that on the right you have a name, like it's Apple, Amazon, Google, and so on, right? So we have the name of the company. What kind of attribute do we have? So the time is, I let you some time so that you can do it as I do it also. So the time is something quantitative. The value is something quantitative. And the name is something ordinal, right? We have two quantitative values. The idea, the best match is to use the two position variables, x and y, and that's what is done on this graph, right? So now we have a design decision. We can map value on the horizontal axis and time on the vertical axis, or we can map it the other way, time on the horizontal axis and the value on the vertical axis. And what people do usually is that so now it's a design decision. It's not if you just look at Bertin or Cardon McKinley guidelines, you don't have anything telling you which one you can choose. They are equivalent. But usually, when you have a time variable, the most usual way to do it is to put it on the horizontal axis, right? So that's probably why time series are usually like that. And we put an L to tell that we are drawing lines and not only dots, okay? And then the name is mapped onto, so it's something ordinal. We probably, so the designer for this visualization looked into the table. They don't want to have something that induces order or quantitative judgment. So they didn't take the size or the value to show the names or the texture. And the next one is the color. And this table tells you that you can use up to 7 colors if you want to make selection. And that's good enough for the data set there, because we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 companies, right? So using the color to represent name is a good idea, right? And they also use text to depict the name. Okay. So that's something basic. The mapping, if you have to evaluate this mapping, you should be able to explain exactly what I did, telling okay, that's a good idea because the time and the value are quantitative values, so they are mapped onto position and so on. Why time on the horizontal axis is a good idea? Probably because it's a convention that everybody uses. Why color is good? Because we have something ordered and we have not too much categories and so on. So you should be able to explain that, right? And if you look at this graph, at the table, we don't have enough information, in fact, to all the information is not captured. For example, we tell that we have lines between time, between successive values, successive point of time and value, but nothing tells us which data point should be linked together, right? So we link together data points with the same name, and also we link them in an order, a specific order, which is the order of time, right? And in this table, nothing tells you that. So we use lines, but to align between different data points, to have a full specification for the graph, you should tell which data points are linked together and in which specific order they are linked together. So there's nothing in this table giving that. So we have lost some information. We don't have all the information there. Okay.
I didn't get this point. What did we lose here?
What is lost there is the fact that, for example, the blue line links together only the data point where the name is Apple, for example. Okay. And having just the table doesn't tell you that. Okay. For example, you could decide to link together all the points at the same time. Maybe it's not a good idea. You will have things like that. Okay. So in this case, you just link. So you also have lines, but you link data points sharing the same time value, but having different different names on it. Okay. Oh, there is a question: why the name is ordered? No, that's a mistake. The name is not ordered; it's something nominal, obviously. Check nominal. Right. Okay, thank you.
But professor, a question about this: if the names they are ordered by alphabetic order, for example, they put Apple before, etc., it could be ordinal, no?
Yes, but remember the order. You can add when you have nominal data, you can add an order onto them, which will be something arbitrary, just a decision. An alphabetical order is something arbitrary. There is no reason to have some name before or after. So you have something ordered when the order is something specific and really that goes with the data. I know it's not that evident. For example, if you look at the example there, they use order for the titles, actor, actress, and so on. So they use the alphabetical order. So in this example, Card and McKinley consider that those attributes are ordered. And why they do that? Because it allows to put those values on an axis and to have some interaction using slider to select some of them, right? But selecting a range that goes from a G to K or to has no really no meaning if you look just at the data, right? So you can consider both. I prefer to see names as just an ID without specific order. And if you want to put an order on it, then you can add, consider it as something ordered. But in this case, if you look at the visualization, there's no reason to consider that the attribute name ordered.
Okay, thanks.
It's exactly the same thing as if you use an ID, you use the social security number. It's a number, so it's ordered, and even more, it's quantitative. You could do compute the difference between my social security number and yours, and this difference has absolutely no meaning. So it's not, you can do it, but it's not something interesting. So I would consider a social security number as something nominal, not something ordered, and even something quantitative, even less. Okay. So if we go back to our zoo, so that's one first example, and then they tackle the problem of having multiple values for time series, and they show, and that's another example where they show this graph, so it wasn't very well known at the time of writing of this paper, but now you may be familiar with this one, with their famous plots for the coronavirus, where you have different you have stacked the number of cases or the number of deaths across continents. For example, I think in the Financial Times there is a popular graph like this one. And the idea there is that you stack the values, so it can be used when summing the values at the meaning. For example, there we have the budget. I don't remember exactly. So no. The number of unemployed workers in the US. Okay. So you have the sum of the different numbers have a meaning. So you the stacking those areas give you something meaningful, right? If we want to define the mapping for this one, let's start from zero. So you have the time, right? And then we will use only two. We'll stack two values. Up some color so the area is filled. Okay. So now in our table we have a data set, the time, which is quantitative, and we have some values, and they are labeled with a name or something, which is nominal, right? And so on. And here, the time is on the horizontal axis, the value is on the vertical axis, right? And if you look at how this table is defined, you can put an A to tell that you have an area that is filled, and you can tell that the color will be used. And as in the previous example, nothing tells you if you stack the values, or it could be like that. You could use something like that. And then, so having something which is not stacked, so it will be hard to, so that the red value there and the blue value, oops. Okay. Okay, back here. So you could stack them like that, or you could change. Oops. You could change the. You could also use two different horizontal axes. So that's a choice you have to make. And the table there doesn't tell you how the areas are put how they are stacked together, or how, what are their positions, their exact positions, right? So it's called stream graph or stacked graph. It's used in many visualizations, and it has some good properties, and mainly the good property is that you can make sense of the sum of the value if it has some meaning. It has also some bad properties, and why that? For example, The main problem is that let's say you have a first stack like that, and a second one. I try to make it even. And in fact, the main problem is that when you want to understand a specific stack, you will the real value is encoded. Maybe this one. Okay. So the real value is encoded in the difference in the vertical axis, But if you your eye will see, will be more sensitive to this width for the slice, which is not the same as this one, especially if you have something very steep. If you have a very steep thing like that, your eye will think that the value is there, but instead the value is something there which is much more large. Okay, so in fact it introduces a bias in perception, and we can see that, for example, if you look at the small slide there, it's quite hard to have a precise idea of the width of the slice. Having it curved make it hard to understand how it is precisely. For example, where my mouse cursor is, you may think it's quite thin, but in fact the green part there has probably the same height no matter where you are, right? So it's hard to tell the variation for a specific slice in this graph. So it has some good properties, but some bad properties. And among the bad properties is when you want to consider specific values. Okay. You can imagine a transition between the with some animation, being able to switch from this one to this one. For example, if you want to keep both good aspect of the visualization, and to be able to switch from one to the other. Another possibility is to use different axes for one for each of the value, and then you will be able to see the small variations. So that the same data set, but with what we call small multiples. The good thing there is that there is no ambiguity. You can make judgments. For example, you can tell, oh, there are seasonal variation in this one, there are no seasonal variation in this one. So you can make judgments. So for example, if we look at manufacturing there, up on this chart, it's quite hard to tell if there are seasonal variations, because the baseline also moves. So the movement of the top, to understand the seasonal variation, you have to do the difference by yourself, and it's something we are not good at. On this graph, it's easier. You can make comparisons between the different values, and maybe one of the problems there is that by reusing, so you reuse the axis, the vertical axis, you have different vertical axis, one for each of the value, and by doing so, the amount of space that you have available is limited for each of the value. So that's a compromise you have to decide. You have to choose a balance between having small graphs or having a cluttered graph. So we'll see another example of visualization for time series, where the idea there was, okay, let's say we don't have a lot of vertical space because we want to show many values. How can we make a better use of this vertical space to better show the variation? So for example, if you have only a few dozen of pixels vertically, then it will be hard to be able to see the small variation and the large variation in your time series. So for example, there, what is done, so it's called horizon graph. So let's take some time to see horizon graph. So the idea in horizon graph is that so the usual way to show time summary would be this one. Let's say, okay, we have a value and the time. And the idea is to, instead of using a single visual variable to show the value, so that's the vertical axis there, we will use multiple variables. And we will, in fact, we'll split the values onto different parts. And those parts will be mapped onto different visual variables. So let's start by the simple part. We have a value, and instead of considering that we have just the value in our data set, we will split the value into two parts, the absolute value itself, and then the information that we need to have the full information, the sign of the value itself. Okay, and then we will do a mapping where on the vertical axis we won't have only just the value but the absolute part. Okay. So our graph will look something like that. That's the same. I try to do the same. Okay. So the part which is negative there is now positive on this part also. Okay. So if we look at the mapping, we have as attributes, we have the time, we have the absolute part of the value and its sign. Okay. X, Y. So yeah, we have a line. We have a line. Okay. And then so we lost some information, and to have back this information, the sign is mapped. On the retinal property color, right? And that's why we have in the graph, we have so the negative values are in red and the positive values are in blue. So what is interesting that there is that we gain some space because the negative values are on the same part of the graph. We are still able to make some judgment. For example, if you want to find the time where the value was the highest, you can go there and find this place. If you want to find when the value was the lowest, then you have to look at the part in red and where it's the absolute value is the highest, but only for the red part of the graph. So you can still make judgments on this net graph. And then horizon graph consider that we could do better. And the idea is that if we don't have much space vertically, so if we want to save space, we can split this graph into slices, okay, into horizontal slices. And so I can put numbers, and then you have to choose a step for the slices. So let's call this step V. Okay, we have 0V, 2V, 3V. And in fact, those slices will get stacked. Okay, so that's the next step for horizon graph, how it is designed. So it's a bit difficult to draw, but I will try. So now the value gets only between 0 and V. And when you have something higher, you go back to the bottom. So that's the part in blue there. And now this part comes there, then the red, then it goes high at the part there, then back here, here. You have the top of the curve. Now, so that's the part there, okay? So I know it's not an easy visualization, so I will try to make some. So, for example, this point there is aligned with this point there. Okay, so we have cut slices, and the slices are now stacked together. And there is a missing information, which is the which slices are we dealing with. And the idea is to use the shading. So the less, how can I do that? Oh, it won't be. So we have only one slice for red, so I will go with red. And then the first slice of blue, maybe I can apply that. Okay. Sorry. Okay, that's easier like that. Okay, we have some light blue for the, so the first level is in light blue, like that. So that's the first level here, and we don't see it anymore. Then the next level is shaded. Okay, so it's not blue, remember, I'm colorblind, so bear with me. And then the next level is even darker. Okay. So in this encoding, we still have, let me change that. We still have the the sign of V at the color, but the attribute value, so is it light or dark, is linked to the number of the slice. Okay, so here we have a slice number 0, slice number 1, slice number 2. And the vertical position is linked to the position, to the value. But if you look at how to compute that, you will have to rely on a modulus, modulo operation. So we have the number of the slice is the quotient, the result of the integral division of the real value V divided by V. Okay, this one. And that gives the value, is it light or dark? Oh, sorry, it's absolute value there. And the vertical position is given by the rest of this division, so it's V, it's a modulus. So in French we use this notation, and it gives you the vertical position. Right? So with those three information, we have transformed the one attribute of the data onto three computed attributes that are mapped onto three different graphic attributes. So we gain some space for our graph, okay, at the expense of using many different graphic variables for the same data attribute. So is it a good thing or a bad thing? In this case, we have only a single data attribute, or we have two of them, the time and the value. So we can afford to use many graphic variables for the mapping, for a single data attribute. So as you can see, I told you before that we map the idea of visual mapping is mapping a data attribute onto a visual variable. And in fact, it's not as simple as that. You can split your data attribute onto multiple variables. You can reuse graphic variables, for example, in when you have small multiples, you reuse one axis for different variables. Okay. So horizon graph is quite interesting because it has some good properties. It saves pixels, but at the expense of using multiple graphic variables for a single data attribute encoding. Okay. So this encoding, I've been maybe a bit fast there. This encoding is not trivial, but it's an interesting example. In the rest of the zoo, there are many other visualizations, and before going into those visualizations, so later on, I will give a lecture where we will go a bit further in this idea of using multiple graphic variables for a single data attribute. It's called a composite visual mapping, and it's something that we have studied with a former PhD student. So I will show you other examples and what kind of studies can be done on those visual mapping. For now, we will look at other examples in the zoo. So that's examples of scatter plots. You are probably familiar with scatter plots. And here, it's called a scatter plot matrix. And the idea there is that when we have many quantitative attributes, so we have seen that we have the position, which is good, then the size, then we have the value, okay, which can encode a quantitative attribute, so that at most four quantitative attributes. And if we have more of them, one idea is again to reuse axis. So for example, horizontal and vertical axis here are used to depict the different attributes in the dataset. So that dataset of cars, and one attribute is the horsepower, the weight, the acceleration, or the displacement, right? And on the horizontal axis, in this column, the horizontal axis shows the displacement. In this column, the horizontal axis shows the acceleration. And in this column, the horizontal axis shows weight. So you have different attributes mapped onto the same graphic variables, but in various places of the visualization itself. So the visualization itself is a composition of sub-visualization, and in each of the square there, you have a different mapping. Right? And then on the lines, the vertical axis is the same, so that the horsepower there on the vertical axis, the weight on this line, and so on. So we have nothing on the diagonal because horizontal axis and vertical axis would be the same data attribute. So it's not interesting to show this graph. You would have only something on the diagonal. And you can see that for two scatter plots that are symmetrical on the diagonal, they have, for example, those two scatter plots, they have the same. So the horizontal axis for one is the vertical axis for the other, and the horizontal axis there is the same one as the vertical axis there. So in fact, those two plots are the same. They just differ with a symmetry. Okay. So in fact, with half of the plots, you have all the information in the dataset. So in this kind of visualization, each of the item on our dataset is plot onto all of the subgraph, which means one car is a dot there, a dot there, a dot there, and a dot there. You know, if we wanted to show the links between the different cars, the graph would be impossible to read. But fortunately, using an interaction, so there is an interactive version. I hope it's not interactive there. I will switch to another view of the same page. There. I hope the interaction works on this one. Okay. So in this this version, you can use interaction to select a subpart of a graph, and then you see that the selection, it's called brushing, you can see that the selection is the same on all the graphs. So if you want to know this specific car where it is, you can see that it highlights there, 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 and there. Okay. So using brushing, you can make the link between the various scatter plots. Okay. So that's the first example where interaction plays an important role, because you can have an idea of the link between different data attributes by using the brushing there to see how are distributed. For example, if you want to consider cars with a small displacement, so this part of the graph, okay, displacement is the vertical axis there, you can see that they have mostly a small weight, and they have a small horsepower, and so on. You can explore the data set in the different subplots and explore the link between the subplots. Right. Let's go back to there so that you can see me. And then we have something interesting there. It's called parallel coordinates. So maybe before that, just so what we have seen before, we have a look at time series. And what we are looking at now is often called a multidimensional data sets. And so time series, you have time as an attribute. Okay. Multidimensional data set, you have many. So more than, let's say, three Q attributes, quantitative attributes. Okay. And if you have more than three quantitative attributes, you have to find some solution to reuse some axis or to, okay. So for that, you have a scatter plot matrices. So it's often called SPLOM, scatter plot matrices. And another example is parallel coordinates for that. Short. And the idea there is that we will reuse the vertical axis for the different attributes. So in our car data set, we have let's say horsepower, we have displacement, we have weight, and so on. Okay. All of them are quantitative attributes. And we map all of them on the vertical axis. And it may seem strange, but in fact, we use different vertical axis for that. Horsepower, displacement, weight, and so on. And each item in our data set consists in a line that links the different values. And so on. And it may seem strange, but what is interesting is that, in fact, you are able to see things. For example, if we go back to scatterplot matrices, maybe you are used to scatterplots, and you can tell, for example, when there is a correlation, for example, weight and displacement on this graph, we can see that the dots are mostly on the diagonal, which means high displacements corresponds to high weight. So we have a correlation, a positive correlation between the two attributes. There we have something going down. So acceleration is correlated with horsepower, and there is a negative correlation. And there you have something less clear, weight and acceleration. There is no clear correlation between, because you have the dots anywhere in the graph. Okay, so you are probably used to make this kind of observation from a scatter plot. In fact, in parallel coordinates, on this plot, you should be able to see when there is a kind of correlation. So, for example, the first coordinate there is the number of cylinders. And the second one is the displacement, so the volume of the cylinders. Okay. And you can see that the high value of cylinders, so 8 cylinders, are linked mostly to the high values of displacement. And then in the middle, it's linked there, and then at the bottom. So when you have links like that do not cross, then there is a positive correlation. So can you spot on this graph a negative correlation? So that means, so negative correlation, remember, on a scatter plot, you have high value on one attribute that are linked to low values on the other attributes, and low values are linked to high values. So if you look at the parallel coordinate there, there is one example between horsepower and acceleration. Low horsepower leads to high acceleration. Acceleration is measured as the time needed to reach a specific speed. Okay, so if you have a low horsepower, you need more time to reach a specific speed. So having this cross pattern there tells you that you have a negative correlation. So that's one of the things interesting. When on a scatter plot you have a positive correlation, on parallel coordinates you will have a pattern with lines that do not cross much. They can cross, but not that much. And when you have some negative correlation on parallel coordinates, you will see that as a cross pattern like that. Okay. So you have to train. You have to train again to detect those patterns, but they are as easy to spot as on a scatter plot. Okay. So why is this visualization interesting? It's interesting because if you look at how the visualization scales with the number of attributes, the scatter plot matrix, if you have a specific space given, then when the number of attributes grows, the size of each scatter plot is reduced, and since you have each attribute on each dimension, the space reduces as a quadratic function of the number of attributes, right? So the more attributes you have, the more the space is gets small, and it gets small fast because of this quadratic requirement. So here you have four attributes, then you have to split your graph into 16 different subgraphs, right? So what is interesting with parallel coordinates is that when you add a new coordinate, in fact, the space decreases only linearly with the number of attributes. Right? You don't have this quadratic number of subgraphs. So that looks promising. So you may be able to show more things with the same space on screen with parallel coordinates. For example, there we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 data attributes. And on the scatterplot matrix, if we want to show 7 attributes, then it will mostly be the graph there will be four times smaller, a bit less, but they will be very small on this graph. Right? So what do we lose? We gain something. What do we lose? We can see the patterns. We can see negative correlation. We can see correlation. And what do we lose?
Any idea? Excuse me?
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure. Go on.
Oh, and I have quite a lot of echo at your place. So what's the meaning of the color here?
So the color in this specific case, I don't remember. I don't remember what is, and they don't tell what the color is. I think it's another attribute, like I don't remember. Honestly, I don't remember.
Okay, thank you.
So what we do lose there is, in fact, we can do comparisons between, so to tell if there is correlation only between successive axes. So you can compare horsepower to acceleration. But if you want to compare weight to, let's say, acceleration, just that, it's quite difficult. Okay, or displacement to acceleration, then you for example, oh, okay, this car go there, and then maybe there, we don't know. Okay. And again, what can help here is the fact that this graph can be made interactive. So, okay, let's switch to this interactive version. First, the kind of interaction there is that you can select a subset as in a scatter plot. And for example, if you want to look at high value of displacement, you can see that they are linked to low value and of acceleration, for example. And using brushing, you can see that low value of displacement are linked to possibly high value of acceleration, or at least that displacement, low value of displacement are linked to low value of horsepower. So those two axes seems to be correlated with some exceptions, but still high value of displacement are linked to high value of horsepower. So again, having some interaction helps to understand the link between between different axes. And another thing which is possible, okay, it doesn't work well here. No, it doesn't work. Is that you can reorder the axis in parallel coordinates. So using interaction, you can put close together two axes where you want to make comparisons. Okay. So again, you have a balance. Well, what you lose on the graph, on the static graph, you can use interaction to gain back the information that is lost on the static graph. So that's a balance between what you can show at what time and using interaction to show the rest of the information. Okay, let's switch back to and then in the zoo it goes to maps, and I won't go to maps, and after it goes to trees and graphs, and we will have specific lectures on that, so I won't cover it today. Okay. Still, that's an interesting paper. I encourage you, if you haven't done yet, to read this paper. And what we'll see now is how. So first, this zoo. So that was the first of its kind. But after that. People started to try to put some order into the mess of all the visualizations that are proposed, and they proposed some way to do classification of visualizations. So, for example, one of the first paper like that in 2011 built a list of visualization specific to trees, so to hierarchies. So if we go to the, so the, what is interesting, it was a paper and it led to a book with all those visualizations at that time, and to a website. And this website is kept updated by the authors. And the idea, they list new visualization of trees, for example. So you can see that there are 300 visualizations there. For each of them, they took a picture. And what is interesting is that they did some classification, and one attribute of the classification is the dimensionality of the visualization. Is it flat? Is it in 3D? Is it a mix of 3 or 2Ds? And on the website, you can select a subset. So for example, only planar visualization, only 3D visualization, or only visualization that use mixed 2D and 3D visualization. Or you can go back to all. You can also select subsets depending on how the hierarchy is depicted. So we'll see later in the next lectures that you can use node and links to show the hierarchy, and we are used to that. But you can also use the containment, so the imbrication, to show the hierarchy. Okay. So we'll have a lecture on that. I won't detail that. So what is interesting there is that criterion to do the characterization of the visualization is do we use orthogonal axis or do we use polar coordinates? Okay, or do we use no specific coordinates? Okay. And what is interesting is that if you have an idea of visualization, or if you want to visualize some tree, you can go there and look at all those visualizations and pick the one that suits the better you need. Right? And for all of these visualizations, for example, let's take which one can we take? Let's say. Let's say this one, Dendrogomics, by Renaud Blanc, that's me, and Rémi d'Autriche, that's a former student of mine. Okay, so that's a work we did in 2015. And then there is a link to the paper describing this visualization. Okay, so you have a catalog with all the visualizations that are proposed every year. So, okay, and you can see that there are many, many visualizations. And then the EuroVis conference started to put as a category of papers surveys. So we have many surveys with list of visualization on a different topic. For example, this one on set visualization. Okay, it doesn't load. But for example, if you have so you have a list in the slide. If you want to look at space-time visualization, then will this one work? You have. Oops, sorry. Which one was it? This one. Or maybe this one, time-oriented data. Okay, so time-oriented data, you can see that you have the same kind of website with different ways to classify data. For example, only things ordered on using polar coordinates, or only things using horizontal axis, and so on. So that's very interesting resources where you can go and pick existing visualizations there. And after that, so in those slides, you have a list of resources to if you want to visualize sets, you can go there. If you want to visualize what is called multifaceted data, so what I call just call multidimensional data, you can go there. If you want to visualize text, you can go there. If you want to look at time oriented data, you can go there, and so on. And then In 2017, survey of surveys of in information visualization. So that's a classification of zoos. So if you go there, then you will have taxonomies or surveys of or zoos of different visualizations. So that's a very, very useful resource where you can go. And then the last was visualization of visualization. Okay, with that not only list state of the art, but also that list tools to create visualizations. Okay. Right. So that's it for today. Next week, we will have a look at interaction, how we can interact with visualization and how powerful it can be. We have already seen some examples with the parallel coordinates or the scatterplot matrix, where the brushing is important to make the link between the different parts of the visualization. But we will see that it's more than that. It's more than just brushing to show the link between the part of the visualization. I guess that's it for today. If you have questions, again, you can ask, and you can ask asynchronously in the chat on Mattermost. And remember, for the project, I will put more details and send you an email when the website is updated. All right. Any question?
No. I have one, but it's just about the project. We need to implement the visualizations only about the questions that we sent you, or we can create another one or update them?
I answered that earlier on. You, if you have new ideas of questions, you can expand your set of questions and then design visualization for those new questions. Sure.